The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Catherine Shaw, and before we hear the show, we just wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For more information on building your own beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. Now on with the show.
All bearers at the ready for a positively funereal edition of the Guardian Film Show. Inside this week, we shall see Michael Caine turned old and grey, American Muscle floundering in the hell of Benghazi, and Robert De Niro merrily soiling his own mighty legacy. Cinema bows out with a whimper and a bang.
Don't say anything.
I will not say a word.
Ball bagged!
Coming up on this week's show, director Paolo Sorrentino casts Limbo in the guise of a plush alpine retreat with youth. Michael Bay salutes the flag on the thunderous 13 hours, the secret soldiers of Benghazi. And oh God, avert your eyes, here's Robert De Niro as Dirty Grandpa.
Thanks for doing this, by the way.
All those treats still to come. But first, it's a little known fact that journalists, when given time off from the serious real world business of reviewing movies, like nothing better than launching investigations and holding the powers that be to account. And now, as luck would have it, they've made a movie out of this trivial little sideline. And so here's director Tom McCarthy, journalist Walter Robinson, and actor Michael Keaton to tell Henry Barnes all about Spotlight.
Mitch, are you telling me that the Catholic Church removed legal documents from that courthouse?
Look, I'm not crazy. I'm not paranoid. I'm experienced. Check the docket. You'll see. They control everything.
It's so complex, this story. Not only an investigation, but obviously the look into clerical abuse and the subsequent cover-up and complicity of the Catholic Church. But there's many more stories to be told about this. And I think what we're doing is just shedding some light on what ultimately was some really terrific reporting.
What impact do you think the film's had in terms of pressing the church to do more? Do you think it's had any?
Yeah, I do.
Hopefully, the movie will continue the discussion, raise awareness, get people talking, and that's the only thing that's really going to cause change.
I think they've got a long way to go.
Yeah.
It's an institution whose own members distrust it to a great degree, as they should.
They knew, and they let it happen to kids! Okay? It could have been you. It could have been me. It could have been any of us. We got to nail these scumbags. We got to show people that nobody can get away with this. Not a priest or a cardinal or a freaking pope.
I think ultimately the film is about personal accountability and responsibility, and not just institutionally, but in terms of the citizenry, and asking ourselves, what was my part in this? What can I do to make it better? And I think that's something we should all be doing more often, instead of just pointing fingers and saying, this is bad, this is wrong, they're bad, they're wrong. I think we all can have some impact in that way.
Joined by our own Spotlight team of Peter Bradshaw and Catherine Shaw. Peter, this is the last of the big Oscar contenders to come off the ramp. Is it a worthy contender?
Yes, worthy being the operative word, but in a good way. I've actually seen this twice now. I'm glad I had the chance to watch it again. When I saw it in Venice, I really liked it. Its clarity and force were obvious from the get-go. At the time, though, I wondered about its pace. I thought it was a bit plodding. Mm. But now I think, well, I think I was wrong to complain about that, because actually what I thought of as plodding pace is actually a very shrewd approximation of the steady drumbeat of what investigative journalism, as it were, the kind of police work of investigative journalism, really looks and feels like.
And it is incremental, isn't it?
It is incremental, yes. It builds up steadily, steadily, steadily. And there is a real integrity to this film in showing that and not doing sexy, wild things all over the place and just showing people like this in office situations, sitting around with cold cups of coffee, worrying, leaving phone messages for people. Yeah.
Wondering
when to go with the story. Fascinating stuff, I think. It's not as sexy as All the President's Men.
No.
But it has some of that procedural feel, like a crime procedural, and I really thought it was good.
I thought it was good. I mean, it's a solid piece of carpentry, isn't it? It's a lot of exposition to kind of pack in. I'm not sure it was more than that.
I don't know. I think it is. I think you can attain elevation through doing something really well, like making a good pot. Very well, that can be elevating. And this is a very good pot. It's really good, and it's really gripping and really works well, and all the cogs work really well, and there's beauty and form to be had in that, I think. I mean, even cogs like Stanley Tucci, who plays this Armenian lawyer, you know, perfectly works in the whole thing.
I pull out the 14 most damning docs and I attach them to my motion, and they prove everything.
I think there is a perennial issue with these kinds of films about whether or not the reporters are too much the story. I think what's distracting about this in this respect is that actually the abuse is not the story, it's the cover-up that's the story. It's the institutional cover-up. And that's sort of the real issue.
And that's endemic. I mean, it really paints Boston as a city that's got this kind of spell cast over it of kind of willful blindness. It's a very cosy, close-shot world of the legal system, the church and the press. And everybody is kind of culpable.
I think they could have pushed that further, actually. I mean, there's a scene where Rachel McAdams shows the newspaper to her nan once they've published it all, and her nan is, of course, culpable. And I think that sort of dreadful internal fear that you have been yourself instrumental in perpetuating abuse, albeit silently, is sort of something that they could have gone a bit further with.
Can it win?
No, I don't think it will now, which is sort of a shame, actually. And, you know, 6 months ago I would have said it would. I think The Revenant is a better film. It's, you know, it's more sort of hookable for Oscar bait, as Oscar bait. I think The Big Short has got this strange dark horse run coming up. I don't think it will go the full way. I think if you've got two ensemble dramas about factual things that happened recently, blah, 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 this is definitely the stronger one.
Everybody knew something was going on. And no one did a thing. We got to put an end to it.
Don't tell me what I got to do. Yeah, I helped defend these scumbags, but that's my job, Robbie. I was doing my job.
Yeah. You and everyone else.
That spotlight out to right some wrongs. And talking of wrongs, we now turn our attention to Dirty Grandpa. Colonel Kurtz had his Heart of Darkness. Robert De Niro has this.
Anybody work here?
Okay, everybody on the floor! This is a robbery!
Oh, my God. You should see your faces. I just went out to grab lunch and a new horse mask. I left mine at the beach the other day.
Spare a thought for Robert De Niro's Dirty Grandpa. His wife just died of cancer, and he's off to Florida for spring break. Spare a thought for Zac Efron's lawyer, who has to drive him there. Spare a thought for all of us, dragged along for the ride.
Drugs? Of course I am! Yeah! But this is still incredible! Flex off history is being made!
What's up now, bro?
Yeah, what's up now, bro?
Catherine, I guess the obvious question is why?
For me, the obvious question is why are people hating on this quite so much? Because I'm going to defend it. I mean, there's a lot wrong with it.
I knew you would.
There's a lot wrong with it.
Fair enough.
But De Niro, he's not got the resignation of things like The Intern. He's not like that. He's giving it some welly. He's bringing it. He's really, really means it. He's good. Zac Efron, we all wondered what he would do. Would he kind of play a psychopath? Would he do rom-coms? What he does, he also brings it. He gets his kit off all the time. And what he is he's this sort of machine-tooled-looking guy. And so playing a kind of preppy, conservative, sort of straight-laced person works really well for him. He's really funny. And the sort of look of panic you get in his eyes is really compelling.
I sort of wondered if that was always intentional.
I think he's terrifically good in this. I think the performances are great. It's only one joke in 10 that lands, but there's a lot of jokes, you know, that you get some good laughs here. It is, without question, very, very offensive.
This is Meredith calling.
Now look what you did. You dropped it in a car's vagina.
There's a lot of problematic things in here. And it pushes it and pushes it and pushes it, and then it pushes it a bit more. You don't have just the swastika of penises in front of the rabbi. You have then the paedophilia thing. So that's just one scene. And there is something amazing about this film. I was amazed by it.
Sucks about Grandma, huh?
Yeah.
Murdered like that.
Nick, she had cancer.
We'll never know the truth.
There's a terrible sentimental quality that creeps in there. And also, just if you're going to do it, go for it. You have him making all these homophobic cracks all the way through. And then he rescues the gay guy from the homophobic bullies to show that he's all right.
To show
really.
He's all right. I didn't have a problem with that. I agree with Catherine. I think this isn't a great movie. But Robert De Niro is more relaxed than we've seen him for a very long time. And he does bring it. He's not a natural comedian, though. I still don't think he is. But it's interesting if you brought a kind of younger sensibility to this film, Wolf. 20-something, maybe teenage filmgoers who aren't burdened with their memories of The Deer Hunter and Raging Bull. They think that Robert De Niro's ancestry goes back to Meet the Fockers.
I'm really sorry, Grandpa. I didn't think you'd be doing that.
So you caught me taking a number three. Big deal, right?
Number three?
There are some perfectly good, gross-out, bad-taste gags of the sort that Dan Mazur, who's written for Sacha Baron Cohen. Yeah. Now, if you had a comic turn like Sacha Baron Cohen, I think this would step it up. As it is, I just don't think Robert De Niro quite speaks the language. Mm. There's something that goes wrong. Although Catherine's absolutely right. He does bring it. He goes for it. There isn't that sense that we had in The Intern, which this film rather creepily resembles in some ways, that he's kind of clenched and not knowing quite what to do. He is very relaxed.
Mm. It's relaxed, though, to the point of sloppy and prone. I mean, for a film like this to properly work, it has to be really tight and taut, and this just seemed to be kind of all over the place.
It's a road trip. You have an arc that works. You have Zac Efron not only sort of loosening up himself, but you have his revulsion at the idea that a 73-year-old man would want to go to bed with anyone. And he says, literally, I think I'm going to be sick. And he does, De Niro's character expresses it in very graphic terms, which are a bit unpleasant. But, you know, by the end, he's come to terms with the fact that he's the straight-laced one, and the idea that his grandfather might want to go to bed with somebody is not that revolting, actually. And that's not an uninteresting arc. There is definitely offensive stuff in here, but you shouldn't write it off. It's sort of brave in its crass way.
Yeah, sounds like you're heartily recommending this.
I think for some people, yeah, for sure.
Relax. This is Florida. Everything's a licensed gun range.
You just shot through a wall, man.
Hey.
There's pedestrians outside.
Yeah, again, it's Florida. These people don't matter.
What?
And now from one offensive act to another, we pitch ourselves into the hell and stench of Benghazi. This is 13 Hours as viewed through the lens of director Michael Bay.
You have a U.S. ambassador at risk.
The ambassador is in his safe haven. You're not the first responders. You're the last resort. You will wait.
None of you have to go. We are the only help they have.
It's the 11th anniversary of 9/11, and the war on terror has hit the buffers. Mad Islamists are storming the American compound in Libya, and the cowardly bureaucrats are twiddling their thumbs, and it's left to a crack team of deep cover security contractors to put the world to rights with a crackle of gunfire and a chant of USA, USA.
We have no jurisdiction in this country. We're not even supposed to be here.
Losing the initiative.
Stand down!
If you do not get here soon,
we are all gonna die.
Peter, another film that has had some fairly scathing advanced word. Are you going to defend this one as well?
I don't know, not really. I'm not very anti-Michael Bay these days. I quite like Pain and Gain, his oddly kind of interesting kind of Hyacinth-esque comedy that he made. And I was having a conversation with somebody the other day that, you know, if Catherine Bigelow's name or Michael Mann's name were attached to this, would we all be lining up to say, yeah, really, really good? I don't know. This felt like playing Call of Duty, basically. It felt like playing Call of Duty for 13 hours. I mean, it was just pure kind of action mayhem, and there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
But I found that dramatically, I mean, there's an important thing happens dramatically when the US ambassador is having to be taken into the panic room when the guys really are up against it. Their backs are up against the wall. They have to rush the ambassador into this super secure stronghold within the stronghold, and then what happens, guys? What happens, Mr. Bay? Well, I don't know. He kind of fluffs it and fudges it and finesses it into more explosions and more big bangs, and we don't quite know what happens until too late.
They were coming in. We're on property. On the roof. Don't leave me.
We're under heavy fire.
So I felt very frustrated. I'm not sure that it went down that way. I'm not sure that he's paying kind of proper tribute to these strategic decisions that must surely have been made.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It was just pure big bangs, pure explosions, and obviously nobody knows better than Mr. Bay how to bring those. And in a way, interesting, perhaps less pure kind of masturbatory hardware, interestingly, than there usually is. But I don't know, I just found this almost experimentally plot-free. It was almost sort of non-narrative. That crucial thing of what happens to the ambassador, I think that just goes for nothing. Mm. And I just don't think that helps as an action thriller. I'm not on the edge of my seat if I simply don't know what's going on.
We are overrun.
And of course, there's the inevitable, slightly tricky Rambo narrative of the real enemies aren't these guys.
No.
The real enemies are the enemies within. They are the pointy-headed desk jockeys of the CIA who let us down.
So is this inevitable a right-wing isolationist fable?
Yeah, there's a touch of the Alamo. They do actually, to be fair,
yeah, they
invoke the Alamo, and there's a little bit of assault on Precinct 13. But always, always, there's the stab in the back narrative, which you just can't get away from. It's not badly made at all. I'm not as scathing about this movie as I thought I would be. And there's interesting things in it. But really, I really don't think that it approximates what really went on in their heads. I don't think it's really on their side in a way that he thinks it's on their side.
Up here in the middle of all this.
Oh, thank you.
Shoot that son of a bitch!
Thinking about my girls, man.
Michael Bay serving some red meat for the red states with 13 hours. Just time for one last film before the lights go down. And fittingly, it's a tale of love, loss, and the withering flesh, directed with a painter's eye by Paolo Sorrentino, and looking back at youth.
How's it going, Mr. Bellinger?
It's going. I don't know where. But it's going.
Michael Caine is Fred Ballinger, an aging composer adrift in the sterile splendour of a Swiss hotel, with just his daughter, his best mate, his fellow guests, Miss Universe, and his memories for company. The past clanks and clatters, and the cows provide the elegy. The final credits are but a heartbeat away. Catherine Sorrentino's last film was The Great Beauty, which I think was our, one of our films of the year a couple of years back, which meant that I was really looking forward to this, but it just feels like a bit of an extrapolation and not quite as good.
Yeah, I think it is. That's exactly right. It's like The Great Beauty, but not as good. When I saw it, I liked it. I enjoyed watching it. It's sort of interesting. There's a lot going on in it. It's very beautiful. It's well acted. There's a sort of firebrand scene involving Rachel Weisz that's very impressive. There's great flights of fancy. I liked all the Paloma face stuff. And there's a sort of searing, barnstorming cameo from Jane Fonda near the end that's sort of worth going to see it for alone.
I did it myself.
But it doesn't stay with you. Mm. Like The Great Beauty, you're haunted by things in it. Here, I'm not haunted by it. I saw it in May, and it's hard to remember it, I'm afraid. So, yeah, it's
well,
a great
Well, The Great Beauty was also like a series of vignettes, but they built to something, whereas this just seemed to sort of trail away.
Yeah, it had sort of real emotional gut power. I mean, it was transcendent. It was like nothing one had quite seen before, and it was, you know, it's like an incredible meal where it's so rich and, you know, incredible.
This is tapas.
This is tapas. It's good though. It's good tapas. You know, I mean, it's not. You know, it's not La Tapa or whatever that chain is called. This is sort of proper. You know, Barofino. This is good.
I'm Luca. Luca Moroder.
Hello.
I agree with Catherine. I thought it was a sort of footnote to The Great Beauty. It's kind of quirky and cutesy and angular in the way Sorrentino always is. When he does English language movies, this is his second English language movie, he betrays a kind of weakness for international celebrity casts and a terrible fanboy weakness for pop star cameos. He gave David Byrne a cameo. Mm. And rather incredibly, he indulges Paloma Faith in the most bizarre way. And I really thought that was kind of wrong, a real misstep. Mm. It's a confection. He sort of snatches at little ideas and brings them all together. And some of them are fascinating. His visual sense, that strange, almost new realist sense of bizarre, ugly people who pop up in various states of undress. And they're fascinating.
Yeah.
But then he kind of brings in Miss Universe, who gets her kit off. And you think, what is the point of this again? Really, other than to show these guys leching hopelessly over her. Yeah. So I suppose there is an excuse for it.
Gosh, you guys have got a strange friendship.
No, it's not strange. It's a good friendship.
There's a sort of flaw to the film when you compare it to The Great Beauty, which was about the Jep Gambadilla character, who was a kind of a clown who could have been a great artist.
Yes.
And that was the tragedy. Whereas with this film, it's like they're great artists who have become kind of old curmudgeons.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to buy that. And always the problem in films, if somebody's a great artist in a film, you have to see what they're painting and think, does that look very good? And if somebody's a great musician, you have to hear their compositions and think, God, is that very good? And you hear his supposedly wonderful kind of Britain-esque compositions, simple songs, and then you hear all these people in the audience going, wow, that is good, yeah. Is it? What? What are you talking about? So I think there's a problem there as well. But having said that, you know, it's terrifically watchable. He's always got that enormous sense of style, and just his address to the camera has got such gusto that it's always, always very watchable.
Now listen, do you see that mountain over there?
Yeah, it seems really close.
Exactly. This is what you see when you're young. Everything seems really close. That's the future. And now... And that's what you see when you're old. Everything seems really far away. That's the past.
That's Paolo Sorrentino's Youth sending us off into eternal rest. My thanks to Peter and to Catherine for escorting me on the journey. Happily, we're back, like Lazarus, same time next week.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.